The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz, and with me today is a former BCW World Tag Team Champion and Television Champion, and of course, a two-time TNA X Division Champion, Mr. Petey Williams. Petey, how you doing today, sir?
No, how's she going, eh? I'm doing good, thank you.
So what's going on? What have you been up to? I know Impact is in full swing.
Yeah, almost full swing. Still no fans. Which, you know, obviously we film at, the studios down here in Nashville. I commandeered one of the offices, apparently, one of our production offices. We're still filming some stuff. We're doing, 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, go home Thursday. I know that, I don't know where you're living, but I know in Tennessee they kind of lifted a lot of the mandates and stuff. Still no fans for us, though. I don't know if that's going to be something that we do. Shortly or a little bit, down the road or whatever. But I think I speak for every wrestler and every wrestling company where, when we say, can't wait for the fans to come back.
Yeah, definitely. It's weird where I'm in New Jersey, I'm in Asbury Park, and everything is kind of weird with like opening, but not schools. Schools are like wide open. All the kids can go to school, but everything else, like small business stuff, it's a weird thing up here.
Yeah, and I get it for the kid. I mean, I don't want to go have this big whole COVID
right
thing, but I know when I was a kid, right? You know, I don't want to relate this to chicken pox, but I remember chicken pox like super contagious, mm-hmm. And I remember like as a kid, you don't get it that bad. And I know my parents, I didn't get it till I was older. I think it was like I got it during like WrestleMania, 14. It was the worst pain in my life. Like I was older. I was driving and stuff like that, like 16 or 17 or whatever. And it was like the worst pain in my life. My parents tried really hard to have me when I was a kid. Oh, your kid has chicken pox? Okay, come play with my kid. But I never got it, right? Yep. So I kind of understand we want to build up our kids' immunities and stuff and, make sure that they're immune to this and whatever the case may be. So the schools, I get it. I know they're vaccinating the teachers. I have kids of my own and stuff. They're at school and they're loving it. I really think the kids need it.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. They need that social environment and, get out there and, if they get sick, it's okay. They can handle it a lot better than, an older person or an elderly person could handle it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. It's good. Obviously we take a lot of precautions here at Impact. I was just, Dennis and I, Lars and all the guys on my podcast, we were just speaking with John Gresham, like that'll air later, but we were talking about Ring of Honor's, precautions for COVID and stuff. And man, they go like we get tested. All of us get tested, temperatures every day, all that kind of stuff. I know AEW gets tested and whatnot. But like these guys, I think they get tested before they even arrive. Like, I guess they get a FedEx thing and they have to do it like this, like on a screen in front of the doctor and then send it. I'm like, wow, You know, and then they have blocks of timing, so it's not all the guys are there at once and they're in the bubble, and then they have to get tested prior to going home. I'm like, that's awesome that you're showing that kind of, like, you know, a caution and or precaution, I should say. So, but yeah, I'm glad a lot of the companies are doing it, and we're, you know, we've got the masks. Obviously, I have mine off now, so we could do this, so it doesn't look weird. Yeah, but you know, it's COVID. Hopefully, it's you know, things get back to normal soon.
So, what are you doing for Impact? I mean, not really on TV much. So, what are you doing behind the scenes?
Yeah, you know, I do the agenting, like producing and stuff like that. I was doing that back when I came back in 2017. I came back as an on-air talent. And then it was really weird the way I got my, like Scott D'Amore, he knew I kind of wanted to get in the production side of it. And even you had mentioned BCW, I used to do some agenting stuff for him, cause we had our own like local TV show there and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I remember, it was before when Uncle Jeff was still like in control of the company, like right before he transitioned out. Scott was one of the agents and a writer, and he had, I think, Desmond Xavier and Matt Sydal match. And Scott's like, hey, you want a shot at, you know, producing? And I said, yeah, absolutely. When? And he goes, Sydal and Des, get with them. I'm like, okay, cool. When are they up? He's like, right after this next match. So you got about 3 minutes. And I'm like, you know, so, So it's like sink or swim, but that's been my, with TNA and Impact, like they've so many times in my career, they just put me on the spot. In my first time ever working in TNA, I wasn't even supposed to be in the match. It was supposed to be Teddy Hart, Juventud Guerrero, and, Jerry Lynn. And then, we did, that was the weekly pay-per-views. Before the pay-per-view went on the air, we filmed four matches for like the X Cup or whatever it was, and Teddy Hart got hurt in one of the matches. And then they're like, yeah, kid, you're up, first match, you got 10 minutes, get with Jerry Lynn, it's a three-way, and you're up. And I'm like, that was my first taste of TNA / Impact. So it's always been that way, and I think that's why, you know, I had, you know, such a long career here, because I know that, you know, when push comes to shove, I can get the job done. So yeah, to answer your question, mostly producing. You know, Scott and I have been talking about, obviously, you know, if they need somebody to wrestle or whatever, they'll utilize me. Haven't been doing that yet. So, but you know, that could be something in the future as well. I'm not opposed to that at all. I mean, I'm getting old, but I can still go.
Yeah, there you go. So you're liking the producing, and it's basically, you know, the road agent, if you will, right? I mean, it's the same thing. They just use a different term.
Yes, I guess. How would I put it? Yeah, I mean, we got several producers here. Like, one is like, you know, myself, D'Lo Brown, Tommy Dreamer, Chris Sabin's been doing it as well. And we got Davari. So some of us, well, a good majority of us, we wrestle and produce. But that's just what we do. And like, you know, a producer, like, and it's kind of weird in this environment too, because A, there's no fans. And we start a lot earlier in the day because we don't have to wait for the crowd to get filled, you know, 7 o'clock show, that kind of thing. So we'll start at like 2 or 3, and, you know, and we're done right now. You know, we're in Central Time. It's just past 9 o'clock, 10 Eastern. And we're done filming the in-ring stuff. And now we're, long story, but you know, our head, like, guy that does produced our promos, he lives in Denver. He got stuck in like this, I guess they got like 4 feet of snow or something. So a lot of our promos, yeah, they got pushed back to today. Couldn't get them done yesterday. So, you know, it makes for a little bit longer days. And you know, it's a lot of waiting around and stuff like that. Long TV days, but, wouldn't change for the world, man.
It is pretty cool though that, like, let's just not, you know, you're still healthy and still can wrestle, but it's pretty cool to kind of say, like, all right, if, you know, if I'm done wrestling, I could do producing, I can do this, I could do that. It's cool to kind of have that backstage role too, because you're still in the business, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's what, and I think every wrestler, I mean, obviously we want to wrestle forever. It just, you know, our bodies can't hold up to it, or, you know, you can't perform the way that you used to perform, and it's always it's always tough to see that where it's like, yeah, I remember watching that guy 20 years ago and man, he was awesome. And you know, it looks like he lost the step. And you know, then when you got the, you still got it chance, that's when you just know, like, no, I don't. You're just amazed that I could do something that I used to do. You know what I mean? But I think every wrestler deep down strives to be like, hey, I want to just be involved in the wrestling part of it. So like, you know, all of us wrestlers love it so much that we would love to do something where we don't have to put our body on the line, but we can also take our knowledge and pass it on to the next generation. And I've always been like that. I've never complained about putting anybody over in a match or, you know, I remember when with this company, I've never really been squashed. Right. But, you know, a couple years ago when they were bringing in Killer Cross, you know, I was like his first feud, I guess you could say. And, you know, we really had to build him as like, you know, our like a monster, like our next guy. Like he squashed me and I got no qualms about that because, I mean, that was my role. We had to get this guy over. And if he beat somebody that is like, you know, can go toe to toe with like the AJ Styles and the Chris Daniels and stuff like that, that I've done in the past. If he beats me, like, oh crap, this guy's the next, you know, and that's just how you build stars and stuff. Yeah. And so I think deep down, everybody wants to have that role after they're done wrestling.
When you produce matches and stuff, I know maybe Damore or Don Callis, I guess they're the bosses of the company and stuff. Is it like the Vince thing where it's your fault? Because you know, I've had a Hurricane Helms on before. I had Daivari on before. And basically Vince is like looking at them like, what? Why do they do that? And kind of blame you. Is that the same thing with like Damore? If they do something in the ring that maybe you didn't expect or didn't see and they get mad, is that your fault or is it the wrestler's fault?
It's either way. So the way... It's kind of tough because I see what they're saying about Vince, but that's not just Vince. That's any management, right? Like, right. It's not Vince's job. It's not Scott D'Amore and Don Callis's job to talk to the talent about the matches. It's the producer's job. That's why we have agents. If that wasn't the case, then we can just eliminate this middleman right here. So, you know, it's just like any sort of company that's structured like that. It doesn't even have to be wrestling, but you have the top and then you have your management underneath and then more management and then it goes down. So yeah, obviously they're going to ask me since I'm the producer, what happened there, you know, and I've never worked for Vince. I don't know what, you know, how bad it gets or anything like that. Damore was the one that trained me and he has no problem telling me like, hey, you messed up or what happened here. And I'm the type of person, if it was my fault, I'll take 100% ownership over it and say like, yeah, that's my fault. My bad. You know, I'm not going to try to hide it or sweep it under the rug. That doesn't help me grow. It doesn't help the company grow. It doesn't help anything. So, but you know, if it wasn't my fault, I'm going to be like, hey, that one wasn't my fault. Like I'll be straight up honest.
As far as craziness, right?
Yeah. Craziness, more filming and stuff. Don't pay attention to good. That.
Yeah, it's all good. But as far as producing and stuff, you know, that they say Pat Patterson was so important with Hogan, you know, with his matches or Brett's matches or Arn Anderson was so important to John Cena matches, stuff like that. Do you think the producer is as important as the wrestler in certain aspects to producing matches?
That's a really good and tough question to answer because you want to say, yeah, cause it's a team effort and stuff like that. Like I know, for example, I just had a conversation with Carl Anderson today. And I'm like, man, I have all your matches again. I'm like, did you say something to somebody that you wanted me as an agent? And he's like, dude, you give good, like, you know, ideas and stuff like that. And like, you know, easy to work with and all that kind of stuff. So it's not that we're asking the wrestlers like, hey, who do you want as an agent? They have no say. And we were joking around. But, you know, when I get that feedback from wrestlers where I can actually be part of, you know, the team in a match, I really like that. I try not to step on toes just because I've been in wrestling matches where, you know, in the old TNA days, some of the times, some of the agents would be like, no, can't do that. You know, and it was an uphill battle. Like, and I could tell a story about it or whatever, if you want, but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so, back in, it was, beginning of January, 2005, it was, I don't remember the pay-per-view, like maybe like a Final Resolution or I don't know, but it was an X Division title match and it was an Ultimate X match. It was myself, AJ Styles, and Chris Sabin. And I was the champion. AJ was going over and, you know, a lot of people like really like that match and stuff, but the finish, I actually had to fight. Like I came up with this finish and I had to fight for it with Dutch at the time. I can't remember if he was the agent or if I just went to him because, you know, he was Uncle Jeff's like, you know, right hand man. But yeah, if you remember the finish, me and Sage, like I hurt AJ's arm earlier in the match. He tries to climb, he can't climb and he falls down. Right. So, oh, AJ, their big top baby face. How's he going to win? Right. He can't because he has to climb up there. So then when Saban and I are up there and we're fighting over the belt, he outsmarts us as a baby face would do and springboard up and with his good hand knocks the belt from between us and captures the belt and he wins, which I thought was a really good finish. It told a good story and stuff like that. But Dutch said, oh, you know, it makes AJ look weak. And I'm like, well, I can see that. A little bit, but I'm also, it also makes him look really, really smart that he was able to use other, like, you know, ideas to win the match, knowing that, you know, he was at another disadvantage. But at the end of the day, I fought for it. Like, I don't fight for a lot of finishes, but I really wanted that one. I fought for it. And then we went through it. So, you know, just being a wrestler myself, and when the agents would be like, no, let's not do that. Let's not do that. I'm like, why, man? Like, I understand that there's more to the picture. But I'll only like interject and say, no, we can't do that unless I like feel very strongly that we shouldn't do that, like what they're asking to do, or, you know, that's not the storyline or the direction that we're going.
Gotcha. I hear of some wrestlers that I've talked to and stuff. It's like, sometimes they come to the building and the producer already has the match like laid out. It's like, here's what you're doing tonight. You're not like that, right?
No, absolutely not. You know, I'll say, unless they have something particular in mind for the finish or whatever, like we, obviously we have a production meeting and then we have an agent's meeting to make sure we're all on the same page. We have a lot of meetings before we get there. And a lot of the times with me, I'll go up to the talent and I'll say, hey, I got your match today. And they'll be like, I'm trying to, like, there's so many different scenarios. It's just hard to, you know, think like, I'll be like, yep, you're up, you know, and do something like this, you know, and make sure in the match you get this in because that's important because what we're, the story we're trying to tell is this. So I'll explain why certain things can be done. Other than that, I trust the talent. I trust, you know, Scott D'Amore and, you know, the management's decision to put these, you know, certain talent on our TV show and the roles that they're in. Like they're here for a reason. It's because, you know, they have the mind for wrestling. They're great athletes, all that kind of stuff. Great wrestlers. I'm not going to try to have them wrestle like the match I think they should wrestle, right? Or else all the matches are going to look the same in my mind, right? I'll throw in ideas. And, you know, I think that's why a lot of the times, you know, talent might like me as a producer because I'll be like, oh, let's, you know, top this off with that. And I'll get into it too, as if I'm, because I can't do half the stuff like a Rich Swann can do, but I love producing his matches because Rich can do everything. I can't be doing like, no, like Phoenix or handspring this and all that kind of stuff. He's such a good athlete. These are ideas that I have that, you know, I would love to do, but I can't physically do them. And that's why I relay them to Rich. Yeah. So I get just as excited as the guys when they work and I'm in the match and, you know, I take great pride in it.
You get to pick any of the guys you work with?
Do I get to pick? No. So, it's like, hey, here's your match. That's a straight answer. Like, this is the match. You know, obviously, I don't know who picks, who produces what match. Obviously a lot of the times we will film out of order. If you look at somebody like Chris Sabin, who's a producer as well as like, you know, he wrestles as well. They have to make sure they space out his stuff so that he doesn't have to, you know, be on headset right before his match and then hurry up and warm up and run right out there and vice versa, right? And all that kind of stuff. So we have to be cognizant of that, especially when we do a lot of tapings in one day. But yeah, no, I don't, us producers don't get to say, you know, I want this match or whatever the case may be. It's kind of like what's handed to us, maybe our specialty or whatever the case may be. Like somebody like Don, like I know when we just had, I think it just aired last Tuesday. They had the interview, and I think Scott mentioned the, you know, Rich Swann versus Kenny Omega kind of deal with the, you know, Moose and all that kind of stuff. That already aired, And, you know, Don was, hey, I want PD producing that and being on headset. Cause that's Don, he'll put it together and produce it. Cause he was part of that. But like, you know, he's like, I want PD on headset, that kind of thing. So, like they get to choose that it's their show. Like the producers don't get to choose who they get to work with.
Is it weird, like producing the show, but there's no fans? Cause it's like, wait for this reaction, wait for that reaction. It's like, okay, pretend there's a reaction. Like it's gotta be like a mind fucked. I mean, it's just weird.
Yeah, no, I agree. Especially like, obviously now what's really helped was, in the last little bit on our shows I think it was right after Hard to Kill or at Hard to Kill back in January, they started piping in the crowd noise, which it just, everybody knows it's fake because there's no fans, but like, I think it just helps rather than dead silence. You can hear everything, like every foot on the mat, like just whatever, you can hear the fling of the ropes. Like just, I think that's, it's tough, but you know, that's in post production. So when we're wrestling, it's like, you can still hear a pin drop, out there. Like that gets all done in post. So it is kind of weird and you don't really know, like, we're doing something that it goes against what professional wrestling is. Professional wrestling, when I started, you know, back in, you know, the carnival days and stuff, like we're playing to the people, we're playing to the crowd, we're going off of their emotions and we're giving that emotional roller coaster and stuff. And our next step is going to be based on however the fans react and what's working and what's not, and change it up. Well, okay, well now we have a game plan and we're just going to, I don't know how, there's no way to feel it anymore. You know what I mean? You just can't feel it in the ring. And like, you don't know, like, did that go? And the only thing I think that gets it, gets the fan, or not the fans, the talent through it, is just knowing that, okay, we're playing to the cameras now. And part of it, that's what we've always done. Even though we felt the fans, like, you know, Terry Taylor used to say to us, like, hey, listen, don't turn your back to the camera, you know, where all the fans are. Because even though there's like, you know, what, 1,000 people behind you, you know, there's potentially millions in front of you. The fans are props. That's what, you know, what they would say. Fans are props. They react. They do, you know, all that kind of stuff. Which, you know, the fans aren't technically props, but I see what he's saying. Like, there's more of an audience here. This is where our advertisement, our sponsors are and stuff. The fans are still going to enjoy the show if you ever back them or whatever. But that's, it is really tough. And I have to give the talent a lot of credit that they're able to go out there and, you know, hustle. And like, there's no crowd behind them when you're like, okay, I'm tired, but I'm going to go through. It's just like, okay, well, there is no crowd. And you just have to remember, there's people here watching, and that's what we're doing it for.
Do you think that live shows, let's say maybe a couple months, you think that will go away? Because, you know, you always hear that, like, oh, WWE, we may not run house shows anymore, or they rather just do it for the TV. You think that's kind of crazy? Like you said, the crowd is so important to wrestling. It just sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't see how I would think that's a horror. I mean, obviously they have, you know, a lot of like very educated people doing stuff in WWE when it comes to like, you know, their finances and stuff. But to me, just the common person, well, just thinking like, you know, financially, like that doesn't make sense. I know they get a lot of their gate for the house shows and like that's a big merch and all that kind of stuff. And I don't see why they would negate that potential revenue coming in. Like I don't see that happening. I think like maybe, okay, when TVs come back and things start going and, what I could see in the house shows, because you look at WrestleMania, I think they said there's going to be what, 40 to 45,000 people there. So half the capacity of there. When you run a house show, like let's say you're running at a small arena or even a normal arena that seats like 15, 20,000, normally house shows don't fill 15, 20,000 for a house show. It's like, you know, 4 or 5 up to 10, depending on where the market is. But if you look at in the COVID, like, if we're still doing the social distancing and stuff, you take that 1,000 people they would get and then narrow it down to 500. And yeah, I could see how maybe they would go in the red and go in the negative and not get as much revenue. But house shows are a big moneymaker. I don't see why they would ever get rid of that unless they're, you know, concerned about their talent traveling and all that kind of stuff. But if we go back to normal and they lift everything, then I don't see why they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, house shows. I mean, that's the best. When I was younger, I mean, you're buying all the merch, you know, you're loving it. That's kind of really, really where you fall in love with the business. That would really stink if they kind of went away from doing that, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, step one for Impact, you know, is to get, you know, fans back in the building. Obviously, fans back at the show for our TV tapings and stuff like that. TNA, Impact, now, you know, before I left, like, I obviously took 2020 off. The last time I wrestled was, you know, it was against Moose in March, but we filmed it in February in Vegas prior to COVID. But they were never heavy on the house shows anyways. Like, our Impact Plus, you know, I guess you call them pay-per-views, but our Impact Plus specials, we would always film those, like, maybe on a house show loop or something. Like, we might do, like, an Impact Plus and then, you know, maybe a regular, like, something else for digital, like a Twitch or whatever the case may be. So we would do that, but we weren't heavy like how WWE is, where it's like, you know, a couple house shows, TVs, go back home for 3 days, do it all over again. So obviously, step one, fans back in the building, get our TVs, you know, back to the norm pretty much, and then we branch out to do more house shows from there.
Now, you are not old by any stretch. How come you haven't been wrestling as much?
Dude, I'm old, man. I'll be 40 this year, man.
Not that old for a wrestler, though. They say wrestlers may start main eventing at 40, you know?
Oh, man, thanks. Maybe I will. No, it's not that I don't want to. Again, I haven't wrestled in, like, 13 months. So it's just tough. Like, I can't, like, obviously, I live in, like, the Detroit area. The school, the wrestling school I usually go to, like, I know when I retired in 2014, came back in 2017, you know, I wanted to get some, you know, ring time in, because it was 3 years since I stepped in a ring before I came back on Impact. And at the time, I was, you know, coming back and doing House of Hardcore for Tommy Dreamer and stuff. But the wrestling school I would go to is across the border in Windsor, like where I train, the K&M Wrestling School, Scott DeMore. And the borders are closed right now. So, and I know there is a school down, like, Trey Miguel has one with this other individual, CK3, and I know the Machine Guns and stuff, they go down there, and it's in Toledo, which is like about 45 minutes away from Detroit, so I can always do that. It's just that, you know, it's going to come. You know, I'm getting back into my ring shape. I'm losing my COVID-10 or whatever you want to call it when, you know, yep. I'm not looking the best. Yep. So I think it'll be a good year for me. I 100% want to step back in the ring soon.
And the interesting thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because it I just am like, my mind just boggled by it. So the Canadian Destroyer, great innovation, great finish. So I'm watching AEW and somebody lands two of them. I think it was Matt Jackson lands two of them, one in the ring, one on the floor, no pin, like no finish. It's like, it was like a nothing move. Do you have to look at the Canadian Destroyer and you're like, how is that not a finish? Like, first of all, people stealing the move left and right. Everybody does it. What are your thoughts on the Destroyer not only getting stolen so much, but they're not even using it as a finish?
That they should be used as finish. But, you know, I mean, not my show, right? AEW's not my show.
Right.
So it's just it's interesting because I remember you know, back before they even allowed it on WWE, you know, before like Adam Cole was doing it and, you know, Rey Mysterio, I think Rey Mysterio was maybe the first one to do it on WWE TV with Andrade. Like, I think they did something into the Destroyer. And then yep. I saw, like, you know, John Morrison take it off the top from the Usos and stuff like that. And then now it's like the norm. But I remember, like, back, like, maybe in 2017, I was just, you know, driving. Joey Mercury just got, you know, I don't know if he got released or quit from WWE. And we were, you know, going to a Tommy Dreamer House, a hardcore show. And I asked him about it. I'm like, so, you know, because I see at that point all like NXT was like, you know, really big and stuff. And they were doing a lot of stuff that like reverse Ronas and stuff like the you would never see it before those head type drops and stuff. And I asked Joey, I'm like, what do you think? You work close with like Vince and stuff like that. Would the Canadian Destroyer ever be possible? And he's like, you know, you probably just have to call it something else other than a pile driver, like a flipping something else. They're just really against the pile drivers there. And then sure enough, you know, a few years later, they're doing it and I see it all the time. And at first I'd be like, hey, man, like it was really cool to me the first time Adam Cole did it and they actually called it the Canadian Destroyer. they called it a springboard Canadian destroyer off the second. And I was like, oh, cool. I should have trademarked that a long time ago. But anyways, but then they switched it. 'Cause they're like, oh, that's not a Canadian destroyer. That's a, I can't remember what he calls it. A Panama Sunrise.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to see it, everybody, I mean, I've gotten to the point, I'm okay with it. Like everybody does it, so much so that the wrestlers out there actually ruined it for themselves because now nobody wants to see it. And it's gotten to the point where I don't even have to complain anymore. People are like, I don't want to see it unless Petey's doing it. And I'm like, huh, okay, cool. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. If they want to do it, do it. Like, you know, when I'm like long dead and everybody listening to this is gone and we have a whole new generation and stuff like that, there's going to be some kid, you know, probably not even born yet, that's going to be doing the Canadian Destroyer on TV because I don't believe wrestling will ever die. And, you know, I could be like, hey, you know, that's the thing that I brought to the table. That was the thing that I was able to, you know, get into, you know, on TV and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm good with that.
It's crazy. Like Dustin Rhodes, who is one of the all-time greats, but he does it. It's like, holy crap. Like everyone is taking your move. You don't have any problem with it? No,
no. I mean, at first, like, you know, my producer on my podcast, Dennis, used to be like, hey man, you should be more upset about this. And I'm like, hey, don't you talk about how my emotions should be. Like, I'm like, it's fine. I'm like, I didn't care that people do it. I don't like when they switch the name. It's just because, you know, when I called it the Canadian Destroyer, like I did that because, you know, the name itself means something to me. Like when I first started indie wrestling, the first ever indie show that I was on, not wrestling, I was still training, but I did, you know, security at the time. Doug Chevalier, the Canadian Destroyer, was his name. He had just passed away. He's the one that trained, you know, Scott D'Amore amongst, you know, a lot of others like Rhino and stuff like that. And then, you know, Scott trained me. So it's kind of like, you know, paying homage to him. So I wanted to put that name in there to just, you know, Doug's never really made it anywhere. He was an indie wrestler, but he was such a great guy. And I never got a chance to meet him, but everybody tells all these stories about him. So I'm like, hey, this is like our, you know, wrestling lineage, kind of like, let's have this carry on forever. So I was just more concerned about the name itself. The Canadian Destroyer, like people are going to do it and they're not going to think of Dustin Rhodes or whoever they're going to think of Pete.
How did you actually create the move? You know what I mean? Like the flip power bomb. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. And I remember at the time when I first saw it in TNA, I was like, man, these guys are creating some like amazing moves, but I was like, damn, that's a good finish.
Well, the idea came actually, Amazing Red made it up when he was 11 years old. Apparently, I guess he like recently, maybe last year, the year before, he put out a video online of him doing it, or maybe he was taking it or whatever. Like, I guess Amazing Red created every move you could possibly think of in pro wrestling. So, but yeah, we were talking about it in the car ride. It was to IWA Mid-South show. It was like in 2003 and it was like, I'm driving. And it was like a 4-hour drive for us. And, you know, Saban's in the passenger seat, Brian Gorey, the ref, it's in the back, and Truth Martini's back there too. And they're talking and they said something about, yeah, you know, and the pile driver, you flip. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? And then we were talking about it, but there was no, like, we couldn't pull out a phone back then in 2003 and be like, yeah, look it. Like, there was none of that, right? So yep. You're using your creative imagination, and I really can understand him. And I asked Saban, we were supposed to work each other that night. I said, hey, do you want to do it? And he was like, like, where would we put it in the match? Like, we had no idea how it would come out, where you put it in the match, nothing. Like, do we do it as a cutoff? Do we do that? So we ended up scrapping it. And then a month later, I went back to IWA Mid-South and I didn't go with them. I went with, and I had to work Matt Seidel. And I said, hey, Matt, I want to try this new move. And he's like, okay, what is it? And I like, oh yeah, I just grab you like this. And then I do a front flip on my butt and you do a back flip. He goes, oh, okay. And that was it. Like, I didn't know the timing, no nothing, didn't know how it was going to turn out. It wasn't the finish because like that was the last move I did. And then I went up top and then he did whatever and then we finished the match, but that was pretty much it. That's how it came about. And then as soon as, you know, the crowd saw it, they went, holy, you know, like this is crazy. And then right, IWA Mid-South were in by Ian Rotten, and then at that point Ian Rotten's like, kid, that was an awesome move. And then he just, you know, strapped the rocket to my back from there. And then, you know, that was that. And then I got to debut it The hardest part was getting wrestlers comfortable to take the move. Again, I couldn't grab a phone and be like, hey, look at this is how you do it. You know, so you,
right.
There was none of that. I had to explain it. And they're like, no, you're going to kill me with that. Yeah, like the toughest part was getting people to trust me and do it. It wasn't like I said, like, oh, I have this cool new move I call the diamond cutter, where all I'm doing is grabbing you. I'm going to fall on my back. You're going to fall on your stomach. Like, everybody would be like, oh, yeah, I'm just falling on my stomach. Okay, cool. No, it's like, hey, man, you know, I'm going to do a front flip. You're going to do a back flip and land on your head, potentially kill yourself, like all that kind of stuff. So the hardest part was getting it into the mainstream, getting people to trust it. And I think the turning point was when I had that, right before I had my feud with AJ Styles, I wrote our first like Impact or TNA at a time, pay-per-view. We were leading up to it and AJ just said, I think I could take that move. And I was like, okay. And then once AJ took it, everybody was just lining up. Like, it was like, they were making me, like, management was booking. It's like, do the Canadian Destroyer, do the Canadian Destroyer. Like, it was like, I didn't even have to ask to do it anymore. So I'm like, okay, move's over. I'm good.
That's awesome. AJ basically helped get it over, you know? That's pretty great.
Yeah, like he was the first like big like main, I guess you could call it like their big main star to do it. Like when I worked like Juventud Guerrero and like when I first did my Impact run in early 2004, Saban, like I wanted to do it to him. He was unsure, you know, because he didn't know me. Like, I was nobody at the time and stuff, but you know, he worked Saban a lot. Saban's like, no, you know, the kid's good. You know, trust him and all that kind of stuff. We didn't end up doing it. That was fine. And I think it was like the month later or whatever. I might have done it to, I don't know. It might have been a couple months later where I actually got it on. And Saban was the first one to take it on TV. And then that's when they were like, oh, keep doing it. Keep doing it. And then, yeah, once AJ, you know, said, yeah, let's do it. And then we did it on the pay-per-view. You know, where I jumped off the second and did the one that was AJ's idea. Like he came up with that. So AJ came up with like the Panama sunrise of it, I guess you could say, yeah. Where we jumped down and I'm like, are you sure, AJ, it's going to be all you, like, I can't protect you as much. He's like, I'm fine, dude, let's do it. So yeah, you know, I gotta give props to AJ for helping me with that.
It's funny, like, looking at it, it's like, okay, so many people have copied the diamond cutter and, you know, they do their own version of the cutter, what, you know, whatever it may call. Then like the super kick, you know, who would have thought, like, Shawn Michaels, main eventer, WrestleMania, you know, like that is no longer a finish, but you could never guess Canadians are okay. A flip, basically pile driver. There's no way that's not a finish. And then somehow it's not a finish. It, to me, it's just crazy. Like, if you think about it, like, man, they kill every move.
Yeah, that's pro wrestling. But what I always say about pro wrestling is, like, everything's been done, but some things haven't been done enough. At this point, the Canadian Destroyer has been done enough, though, so.
Yep. And didn't Red, though, his was the Code Red. It was more of like a powerbomb, so though.
Yeah, no, he did the Code Red, but he also came up with the Canadian Destroyer, like, unbeknownst to me, like.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I don't have the video when he was 11, but he wouldn't be the one giving it. He'd be the one taking it from whoever.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Gotcha. So, and I remember the first time I gave it to Red, I was trying to explain it to him. I'm like, yeah, I had to beat him for the exhibition title or something or whatever it was. And I said, yeah. And I just do. And he goes, I know. And I'm like, oh, how do you know? And he's like, yeah, you know, I used to take it. And I said, really? He's like, yeah, you know, I know that. But he didn't tell me, like, hey, I made that move up like 10 years ago. Red's not like that. But yeah, no, he it was just funny. He's like, oh, I know. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Sure. Sorry, buddy.
And you did end up beating him for the X Division title, which, you know, really kind of puts you on the map. And he was really, I mean, he was one of their top guys for the X Division. And the X Division was like kind of the main reason a lot of people would buy those pay-per-views and stuff earlier in the day. Was that a big moment in your career? I mean, was at that point, the X Division was huge to me anyway, and a lot of the fans' eyes.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I think we had co-champions, Frank Kazarian and Michael Shane. And we were having a gauntlet match, and it came down to them to me and Red, and they both got eliminated. So that pretty much showed the fans, like, hey, there's going to be a new, excuse me, there's going to be a new X Division champion. Just, is it going to be Red, or is it going to be Red again? Losing my voice now. Or is it going to be Petey? And that was the moment where they're like, I just found out that day, like it was from Jerry Lynn. I think he was agenting the match and he said, hey, you're going to do this, this gauntlet match. I'm like, all right, who's going over? He's like, you are. I'm like, is it for the title? And he said, yeah. I'm like, wait, you guys are putting the belt on me? I didn't even have a visa yet. All right. I'm Canadian wrestling illegally in the US. The visa was in the process. I think that that date was like August 11th of 04. I didn't get my visa till like August 20th. So I literally had to give the belt to Andrew Thomas, who was a referee at the time, producer here at the time. Now he works for AEW. I had to give him the belt to carry it around because I couldn't bring it across the border. But yeah, it was a big point in my career because at the time, like I was one of the longest reignings at that time because we were transitioning from, you know, doing no more weekly pay-per-views to having just a weekly TV show on Fox Sports Net and then the monthly pay-per-views with the Big One Victory Road. It was all of that was like, man, I had such a good year. I remember like all the promotional posters and stuff like that had like, you know, AJ on it and Jeff Jarrett. And I don't remember if like it was Nash or something, but Monty Brown and stuff. And I'm wrestling AJ and I'm like, well, obviously AJ is going to beat me. He's their poster boy, but they end up having me beat AJ. And I was like, it was pretty crazy that few months, that year for me, my career. So.
Yeah, it really put you on the map. Not only the Destroyer, but then putting the X title on you. I mean, really put you on the map and kind of says like, wow, this X division not only, you know, has AJ Styles and all these other great guys, but wow, this guy, Petey Williams, holy shit, look at this guy. He's got something. So it was really kind of an interesting time in TNA just because the X division was really the main focus for a while.
Yeah, and a lot of times, like, you're really hard on yourself as a wrestler because I'm like, did I help ruin the X division? Because at one point we went from here to here, you know, then back up. Like it was always on a roller coaster. And I'm like, and I always look at like myself. I'm like, oh, did I help ruin it? I don't think so. But sometimes I think of like, I was the one that, I mean, I don't know where I'm going with it, but I always think of the back of my mind. I'm like, okay, well, I didn't do as much flashing, high flying stuff as a lot of these guys. And I'm like, I did the Canadian Destroyer. That was that. But it just seems like sometimes your own worst enemy, like your own worst critic. Like, did I not do enough as a champion? That's what I think sometimes.
Do you think that like the X division itself, do you think that was kind of like a game changer for wrestling? Because now so many guys kind of implemented that style.
Yeah, I really do. I think what you see in the X division from like the early 2000s, that's pretty much what you're seeing on any other television show out there when it comes to wrestling. So yeah, I really do think it revolutionized how wrestling is. Like it's that old school type match. Like I still love watching and stuff like that. But those are gone. I mean, you don't see any of those anymore. So yeah, I definitely think that, that the X division really brought wrestling what it is today. Whether you feel that it helped, like, you know, kind of killed wrestling or not, it brought wrestling where it is today.
The athleticism, you know, back then is crazy now. I mean, I feel like it's even more crazy. Do you think that the psychology is lacking in today's wrestling? Because you can mix in the athleticism, but maybe it's missing selling in the psychology a little bit.
Yeah. I would agree, but the way that it was kind of described to me back in the X Division days, X Division, if you look at them like cruiserweights, if you relate it to boxing, so you got guys like, you know, Mayweather and stuff who are not heavyweights, right? But they can, like, him and De La Hoya can, like, hit each other in the face multiple times without going down, and they're still going, and they'll go, like, the 12, 15 rounds, whatever they do now. Okay, cool. But the heavyweight matches... You got Mike Tyson or whatever, his match are lasting a couple times because you get hit one good pop with him, he's done. That's how they kind of related it to the X division. Like, hey, we're lighter. We don't have as much force around our hits and stuff like that. So we can kind of brush them off a little bit more. I think it's just us trying to, like, you know, sorry. All right. Getting kicked out of the office in a second. I think it's us just trying to justify, like, hey, we're kind of cruiserweights. Look at like other sports and like UFC and boxing cruiserweights and look how the heavyweights are. It's faster, we hit more, not harder, but more, as opposed to the heavyweights.
Gotcha. Now, I guess we'll wind it down. We'll hit the finish because I don't want you to get kicked out of the office there.
Oh, he's fine.
Oh, okay. I was going to mention Little Petey Pump, or, you know, Little Papa Pump at one point. That was great because, you know, that's not really X Division, but you're kind of separating yourself with Scott Steiner. What was it like working with that madman?
Oh, man, it was actually great. I got along with Scotty very well. Don't know why he took a liking to me. I don't know if, like, you know, Scott has a reputation back in the WCW days of being a bully. A lot of the guys were afraid of him and stuff like that. I don't know, like, you know, he got a little older and maybe he calmed down a little bit. I don't know, but like first day he was trying to bully me and I was just like shut him down or whatever. And I don't know if that like earned his respect or the fact that I work out and stuff like that. He's like a body guy, you know. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's because I always looked out for him and stuff. But we got along very well. We did a lot of fun and stupid things. You know, I was getting shot in the back with a paintball gun, bareback, and riding on the hood of his car. He's a crazy driver, by the way. And, you know, we couldn't do the waterboarding because that's not good. But, you know, he tried drowning me one time, all this kind of stuff, shaved my head. But it was great. I loved it. Did a lot of cool things and got to work with, like, you know, Angle and Joe and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and out of that came one of the best promos in wrestling history, the math promo. And yeah, I thought it was a good mix. You know, so I got to thank Vince Russo for that, because it was his genius idea that, you know, I started off as like this Maple Leaf Muscle. And then he was like, oh, I can see you and Scotty doing something. And then they just kind of, you know, pushed it that way. And I had a great time. I still talk to Scott and I see him, and you know, he's still the same crazy guy.
How did you not break during that promo? How did you not start, you know, like dying laughing from that?
I did break. If you rewatch it, it was one take, believe it or not. And I'm sitting there like this, and we're, you know, he's giving his promo and stuff, and then the mask start to my mind didn't start making sense. And I had my glasses on and my chainmail.
Yeah.
And I pretty much just look in the camera like, oh, okay, I guess they're not going to call cut. We're going to still film. And, like, so I did break. Like, at one point, like, I'm like, this is stupid. Like, Vince, you're not going to call cut? No? Okay. All right. Let's keep going. So it's good I had my glasses on and was covered up. But, no, I did not, because I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, this doesn't even make sense. But, it, you know, I mean, what do I know, I guess? Because, I mean, one of the – it still lives up to this day as one of the greatest promos ever.
And it fits his character. It's like, okay, he's just nuts. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, he
just goes. That's the thing. Like, there'd be times, not that promo, but where, you know, Scotty would be in character and, you know, stumbling over words like he does. And he'd be like, cut, do it again. And like Vince would get upset and would be like, no, bro, no, why? He's like, I stumbled over that word. He's like, it's okay. That's your gimmick. You have so much pent up frustration that sometimes you don't even pronounce your words correctly. And yep. He's like, that's great. And like, he tried to push that in Scott's head. And I think that's why you saw the Scott Steiner at the end of, like, you know, his run with Impact. It was different than the run he got from WCW, because Vince helped his character, as like a lot of people don't think so, but he did, because he kept saying like, no, dude, like, listen to me, like, this, it's okay if you stumble over words. And then we get like YouTube stuff on YouTube, like Scott Steiner versus the English language, and we get a lot of comedy out of that. But, you know, that was Vince pushing that, like, no, it's okay. Like, A, it's funny to some people, that at the same time it makes sense. Like, he's just like, and he can't even say his words. So I get it. I loved it. And we tried to do everything in one take, but it didn't always work out that way.
I asked Russo too, because I said, how did you produce that segment? How'd you write that? Like, how'd you create that? So interesting. He said, I had nothing to do with it. I stood there and I didn't tell him to stop. He just went and he goes, that was all him. So I was like, man, like, what a creative, random promo.
And that's the thing. So I also heard that, I did hear that Russo, and this is like probably only a couple of years ago. Probably in like 2017, somebody told me, it's probably totally wrong because it's like 15 years after the fact or however long, that Russo wrote the math promo. But if Russo's saying that he didn't, I don't know what's true. So in 2017, I had to wrestle Matt Sydal, and Steiner just won the, or was about to win, or maybe he did win. He teamed up with Eli Drake for the tag titles, and he came in, and I asked him, I said, why don't you bust my promo and do some math and stuff? And he's like, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, just make up some math stuff. He's like, no, it's got to make sense. And I'm like, what? It's got to make sense? The no, math got, no, he said, no, he said, yeah. The math's got to add up. And I'm like, add up? Like, what? So, that's why it was, I really don't know what to believe. I'm like, did Russo write it? Did Scott write it? Like, I don't know. But usually Russo never wrote anything for Scott. It was always coming out of Scott's, mind. So I believe that it was Scott doing that promo.
Yeah, he said, Russo told me, he said, no, that was all Scott. He's like, I wish I could take credit for it because it's like a work of art. It's like a genius that he said that because it's so funny. You know, Samoa Joe, you fat pizza crab, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he starts going with the math, the 33 and a third. Like,
yeah, just, 141 and two thirds percent chance. I'm like, you can't. Okay.
That's so great. What's interesting though with Steiner, after his WWE run, people are like, oh, his leg injury, he had that bad foot injury, oh, he must be done. And then all of a sudden he's working with you and Samoa Joe, and everyone's like, okay, what happened to WWE? Like, you know, maybe he is healthy, maybe he is good. So you had like a great match with him and kind of put him back on the right path.
He's easy to work with, and you know, he does have a whole slew of injuries. Like, we were doing a Chikara show. We did me, Jordan Grayson, Steiner, and this at the end of 2019, where we did the King of Trios. Yeah. And, you know, like, I remember, like, you know, he was winded and stuff. And I had, one of the people that worked there was like a paramedic or whatever, nothing serious. But, you know, I said, hey, can you just check on Scotty? I'm like, he's not usually like this after his match. And she did. And, you know, he's like, yeah, he's fine. But I remember him saying, like, she asked, like, do you have any injuries or have any prior injuries? And he says, I've had everything injured except for, I can't remember if it was his left or right. He said, my left ankle. That's the only thing I've injured in my life. And I'm like, jeez. So he's had a lot of injuries. Even, you know, at one point during my exhibition title run, I want to say, yeah, he tore his ACL completely and he was out for a while. And that's right before the main event Mafia thing. So it's interesting. I wonder how long our run would have been had he not gotten injured, you know, because that kind of put the end to it. So a lot of this stuff I think about, like, oh, I wonder how things could have been different. But Scott will bump, man, and he's a good bumper, and he had no problem, like, you know, bumping for us smaller guys and stuff. I don't know if it was the same way in WCW. I don't know if, like, you know, later on in his career, he needed to be like, hey, I can still go in the ring. But, you know, he was always really generous to me, and I had no problem working with him. I actually really enjoyed working with him.
You always hear funny stories of him, like in WCW, trying to drown Disco Inferno, trying to beat up certain guys.
Who doesn't want to drown Disco Inferno, though, man? Come on.
Well, Disco kind of tells a story where he wasn't really trying to drown him, but he has attempted to do it to several people. Basically, they're on the jet ski. He knocks him off the jet ski, and then he sprays the water. He keeps going around so he can't get back to the jet ski. So kind of sort of trying to drag.
I would have done the same thing to Disco. So, I mean, you can't really hold that against Scott. No,
that's absolutely true. Not. True. Then you always hear, like, you know, he basically took DDP's clothes off and like try to throw him in front of fans, you know, in the locker room, just to like all these like people. Oh, he's bullying. But to me, it's like with a sense of comedy, you know what I mean? He's just being funny. Like, it's, you know, tying somebody up and then, like, you know, fake beating them up, or like they used to play with Mysterio and his mask and stuff. And I don't know, to me, like, it's more comedy than, oh, come on, he's bullying people. It's just him being kind of silly.
Yeah. Old school stuff. Yeah. And we used to do all that stuff. Like, in my first run, all of us X Division guys, you know, like, used to hang out together, like, you know, myself, Sanjay, Saban, Shelly, you know, Creed, or like Xavier Woods, you know, Jimmy Rave, even we had A1 with us and stuff. Jay Lethal, we'd always hang out in a bunch, and we would do all that silly, stupid stuff all the time, like just trying to rib each other. Like, one time, A1 and Shelly, like, me and Saban were rooming together, and they flipped our box springs and our mattresses in our hotel room and then remade the beds. You know, so when it came time, like, oh, this is a nice good day. And then it's like, oh, why is this bed so, you know,
yeah,
like,
I mean,
we would do all sorts of stupid stuff like that. But it was just, you know, we're with each other every single week for multiple days. You just got it. It's like we're brothers, and that's what, you know, brothers do to each other.
Yeah, you got to have a little fun on the road. You know, you're going to get bored, and you got to spend so much time together. You got to, you know, lighten the mood a little bit.
Exactly. And I mean, man, I wish I could just remember like more, you know, stories and stuff like that. But I, like, we always talk about it. Like, I always run into A1 who's like, you know, semi-retired, you know, still does some stuff. He looks great and stuff like that. But I'll see him on the indies prior to COVID. And, you know, we always talk about like, man, the best years of our life were that, you know, couple of years when we were, you know, always going to Florida every week. Like, it's awesome. Like, us dudes from Canada, we get to fly to Florida every single week. It's like a dream, and like get to hang out and do the coolest job. And like, it was just awesome. Like, we loved it, and hang out with cool people and do all these things. Like, just a kid's dream come true. So we always look back on that, and we always talk about it and be like, man, remember that time? Remember that time? Like, those were definitely the best years of our life.
That is great. And what's kind of like, I know it's like a generic thing, but what's like some of your favorite matches in TNA for the X Division? Just because I know I love that. Like, somebody says to them, oh, I'm going to go check it out on YouTube or so, or, you know, the Impact Plus app or something. You need to go check it out. Do you have some matches that stick out to you from Impact?
Obviously, you know, of my own, you, obviously the myself, AJ and Chris Sabin, and that, I want to say it was called Final Resolution. I want to say it was called Final Resolution 2005, that Ultimate X match. That one I really enjoyed. You know, it's funny because I remember Sanjay used to get all the dirt sheets back when you had to get them mailed and you read them. You know what I mean? And I remember, I'm like, oh, let me see that. And because they rated our match, and, you know, they rated it high, whatever. But they were like, oh, you know, word is that they've been planning this match for several weeks before. And I'm like, wow, that's so horseshit, because I remember we couldn't find AJ that day. Like, I don't know if he was doing other pre-tape stuff. Like, where's AJ? We need to put this match together. You know, show's about to start. So there was no like weeks. Like, we came up with that stuff that day. So that's one of them. And then even the month before, and I want to say it was Turning Point 2004, myself for Sabin. Everybody forgets that match. We had such a good match, horrible finish, but whatever, because it was brass knuckles. But we had such a good match. I really enjoyed that match. It was really overshadowed because that was the same pay-per-view where, like, Elix Skipper walked the top of the cage and did that Rana. Yep. So, obviously, everybody remembers that. They remember the match Sabin and I had. I'm trying to think of, like, later on in my career. Myself and Frank Kazarian for the X Division title, it was Slammiversary. I don't remember what year. I think it was 07 or... it might have been 08, but I really enjoyed that match. I remember, you know, we were kind of like getting close to our not hitting our time, going over our time. So we were kind of rushing a couple things. And I remember Uncle Jeff was like, hey, you got to hold that sharpshooter for longer. And when he was bleeding and stuff, like, that tells a story. I'm like, yeah, but we were like, you know, we were trying to get we needed to go home. We were here, and he was like, no, don't do that. And I'm like, what? We would have gotten so much trouble if we would have went over time, you know? And then a couple of like nostalgic things that I really like is we had a pay-per-view in Canada, in Toronto. It was like our first pay-per-view really outside of the US. And it was myself versus you know, Xavier Woods versus Daivari. And I remember our time got cut a little bit. I was kind of irked about that, but it was just really amazing that, you know, I was a heel this whole time. And then, you know, you walk out that arena in Canada, and it was like the reception. I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, wow. And there's like signs that say, like, you know, Petey for president, if Petey loses, we riot and stuff like that. And I just say, you got like 5,000 people going nuts. I'm like, wow, this is really surreal. Like, I mean, I don't remember much of the match, but just moments like that. And then even when we had, I think it was Bound for Glory 2017, you know, we were in Ottawa, and I just remember the whole, like, I come out to the Canadian national anthem, and like, just, we had a 6-way match, and you know, I made the entrance, and people are just singing the national anthem with me. And it was just like, and even Sanjay, who was, you know, a writer at the time, but also in the match, he was like, oh, this is so effing awesome, Pete, this is incredible. Like, he was having a good time too, just the energy of the crowd. So I more remember that energy of the crowd rather than like the match itself, because I've had awesome matches that were never televised in front of 20 people as well, you know? So those are just a couple that I remember off the top of my head.
Is there any matches that you're looking to have? Like you said, you want to return, you want to get back in the ring. Is there anybody you're looking to wrestle? Maybe Ace Austin, something like that? Or
well, I've wrestled
somebody
Ace
there?
Austin like a couple times already, you know, a few years ago when I was still wrestling with him, when he was up and coming. Like I think I was like his first little feud to actually put him like, you know, elevate him to the next level and the levels he's at now. But yeah, I'd love to, you know, go at it with him again. Even like, you know, Rohit, I like what he's doing now. And, you know, I'd like to get in the ring with, you know, some of the AEW guys good too. Like I haven't worked Kenny Omega in like since 2004. Well,
wow.
Maybe. So, and I mean, we reminisced a little bit when he came at, I think it was Hard to Kill maybe. I think in January or something, you know, and we reminisced about that. And he was very thankful because at the time I was X Division champion. The thing that sucks is it wasn't recorded. It was like this NWA anniversary show. And me and Kenny, I think, were the main, and he was like the new up and coming, like, you know, next big thing. And, you know, he still this many years later thanked me for that. Cause he was like, man, you didn't need to have that type of match with me and give me so much offense and stuff like that, but I really appreciate it. And I'm like, dude, I've always wanted to pay it forward because I used to hate getting in the ring with somebody that's like, you know, I used to like watch on TV or whatever the case may be, and they didn't want to do anything. But I remember like one of the first big names I worked was Jerry Lynn, and Jerry Lynn wasn't like that. He would go out there and he would have the Jerry Lynn awesome match that he has. So I always appreciated that Jerry Lynn did that to me. And I said, I want to be like that. And I want to be that guy that pays it forward rather than be like, oh, I'm just going to phone it in today and earn my paycheck. So, you know, and I think that's what wrestlers should always strive to do, not just, you know, phone it in. But that's just me.
True, very true. And that's pretty cool. Kenny Omega is obviously you guys are going to remember that stuff, but that's pretty cool that you get to kind of do that, because now AEW is kind of working with Impact, and Impact kind of working with AEW. So that's an interesting thing for wrestling. NWA is kind of sprinkled in a little bit with everybody. It's, I don't know, it's a different world in wrestling. You would never see WCW and WWF, you know, teaming up or something like that. So it's weird to see, right? Or is this a good thing? Is this like a new thing for wrestling that all these companies are working together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been done before, just actually we're acknowledging it. You know, like ECW was in cahoots with WWE back in the day. Sure. And like, you know, like all this kind of stuff. I think we're just like actually putting a name on it now, like the Forbidden Door and stuff like that. So it's a little bit different. I like it, though. I think, you know, for many, many, many years, it was always WWE. And then when TNA was coming up and Ring of Honor, they're always fighting for like maybe who's second best or whatever. And then you have AEW, you know, rising up, and then you still have like the Ring of Honor, TNA, like all this kind of stuff. New Japan jumped in there. And I think maybe, I don't know if all the companies got smart and were like, hey man, we should stop fighting each other and work together because right. I think we'll make more of an impact if we go at this. And I don't think we're trying to overtake WWE or anything like that. It's just like, you know, I think we can share viewers and, you know, share all that stuff rather than trying to fight for them and, you know, go head to head on the same night and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's a very smart business move. I don't know how smart. I always wonder, like, I'm not privy to all the conversations that happen, but, you know, obviously you got Tony Khan that runs AEW. You got, you know, Scott and Don over at Impact, you know, Sinclair over at Ring of Honor, you know what, and you got New Japan. But it makes me wonder, like, how those conversations go when it's like, yeah, you know, we'll have Kenny Omega versus Rich, title versus title. Okay, who's winning?
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's interesting to me. And I think, I mean, I don't even know if they planned that far. Maybe they have, you know? Like, I mean, so even, like, I've always been a wrestling fan, so I'm even excited, and I work for the company. You know what I mean? So I got to think that the wrestling fans are also super excited. So that's how you know something's working, when you have somebody that actually works for the company being excited about, you know, what's going to happen next. That's when you know, okay, you know, the fans are in for a treat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We don't know. He's the Kenny Omega's trying to be the belt collector, and Rich Swann is becoming a bit of a belt collector himself. So who's going to win? Yeah, it's pretty cool. Rebellion in April. That should be a pretty good match, pretty good pay-per-view. And I like that Impact is, you know, keeping their name out there. They, like you said, you got the shirt, the Good Brothers. You know, they're on Dynamite every week and Impact every week. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I just happen to be wearing this today. But yeah, no, I got to thank the Good Brothers for, you know, the nice merch, collar elbow. They also hooked me up with merch too. And then, yeah. And also, you know, since we're on here doing a podcast, you know, myself, I'm sure I know you've talked to Dennis. Dennis, the yep. producer of our podcast. It's the Wrestling Perspective. You know, we're on Fight TV, on YouTube, anywhere you get podcasts. We have an awesome like group of guys.
Yeah,
very
it's crazy.
Original. I don't think it's been done before, but you know, myself, Dennis, we got a 4-time Stanley Cup champion, Darren McCarty, from the Detroit Red Wings. We got, you know, major league, you know, baseball player, Dimitri Young, you know, used to play for the Tigers and a bunch of other teams. Jason Kendall. I can't talk about him because I don't want to give away any information, but we got, him on there potentially, maybe not. And I said too much. Okay. And then, Lars Fredrickson from the lead singer or one of the singers from Rancid. And it's just, I'm like, wow, how do you get this group of guys? And we all just love talking wrestling, just like we're talking right now and just, you know, doing interviews. And we don't always do interviews, but we talk and shoot the breeze and fantasy book and maybe do Sweet 16s and all this kind of stuff just because we like watching wrestling. And I think it right now, it's a really great time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, and the Wrestling Perspective podcast is crazy because you think about it, you get all those guys from all these different genres, but they're all so successful in those genres, but they love wrestling. You guys all love the business.
And a lot of the times what they'll do is they'll relate it, like, you know, Lars will say like, oh, you know, when I used to, you know, travel here in Japan and do this, and, you know, they can relate their traveling, their business, you know, because they've been at the top of their business to like wrestling as well, not in the same way, but it's really interesting how the dynamics of a show or the dynamics of an event or something, how they're all very similar, and you know, the politics, all that kind of stuff. I got to move out of the way. I think I'm getting booted out of this office. So, so yeah, that's always very interesting to me. Sorry about that. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah, no problem. Before we let you go, let's just give your social media plugs and get that out there.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at IPD Williams. Obviously, you can follow us, The Wrestling Perspective, on YouTube. I think we air on Fight TV every Monday and Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. What else? I think that's it. And then obviously, you can find our podcast on any other like outlet that you usually normally get your podcast.
All right. Awesome stuff. Petey, thank you so much. Appreciate all the time and get back to work. You got some work to do.
I know I do. But yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. You guys are doing a awesome, phenomenal job too. So just thank you for having me.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And good luck with Impact.
All right. Thanks.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.